Shoutouts continuing. You got one. Hold on. I'll show you.
We're naming dudes.
We are naming
right
dudes.
But Duco's hot.
My man Andrew is getting his second shoutout of the day. We asked yesterday. We informed him that we were not 97 years old, and we asked him for at least one song from the 21st century.
But this seems like still like
no,
a
he's
song.
Like, he's like, I don't want to get too far into it. Yeah, he's like, these oldies.
And guess what? He nailed it. I love that song.
Good job, buddy.
Just got a couple excellent. I know we got Ben on the line, okay, and we made him get up early, but we got a couple great Puck Ducos in the break.
He's never sat around listening to dudes talk about hockey in his life before.
Colorado Avalanche gold medalist went with Matt Duchene. 3%.
Hot.
A Carolina and a Calgary Flame. The council agreed on Marty Jelena.
Marty G.
2%. And we ended up going with Doug Weight for Carolina and the Oilers. And it was 6%. It was correct. We remembered correctly. Adam Foote was 16%. Yeah. So okay. Like that one. All right. There you go.
Now we welcome in first guest of the day. Very, very happy to do so. As always, this Insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Ben Schulman joining us now. Ben, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Great. You know, we do feel bad making the guests wait on the line. But as I said, you know, you're Canadian. It's not the first or last time you'll sit around biding your time while two hosers talk about hockey.
So. We're just naming dudes.
Naming dudes. It's one of the great pastimes in sports is just naming dudes, whatever one you like. There's a lot of dudes we could name on the Blue Jays. We just don't have many kind names for them right now. We'll start with the bats. That's where everyone goes. I mean, you see it again. Another, let's call a spade. Listless performance. Siddle was steaming mad at Santiago Espinal for the pinch hit at bat, rightfully so. Vladdy gets the one knock with runners in scoring position, but just another day. And yeah, Jack Flaherty was good. I'm not going to tell you otherwise, but we cannot sit here after every Blue Jays game and just give credit to the other team starting pitching. There has to be another way to go about this.
Yeah, no, you can't. And I mean, the Baltimore Orioles have been really, really good this year, but it's not because of their starting pitching either. And it's the second time that they've come to Toronto and the Blue Jays have hit very little against them in the entire series. I mean, they scored 10 runs the whole series, and you know, a good handful of them were because Shintaro Fujinami couldn't find the strike zone. And you got to take advantage of that, don't get me wrong. But they had a pretty good run out of the break, I think, offensively. I really, you know, think that it's a huge, huge bummer in the timing of Bo Bichette going on the injured list. And, I mean, people are going to get injured. There's nothing they can do about that. But it's, you know, it has been, you know, a disappointing offensive performance most of the time they've played against the Red Sox and the Orioles this year. And that continued this past week.
Yeah, and I think the reason that this is so, because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, Ben, you look at where the standings are, and Jays are in a pretty good spot heading into the stretch run of the season. But the reason that it's so frustrating and the reason that fans are so mad, and I don't know about you, but the feeling I'm getting amongst the fan base is unrest. They are not thrilled about watching this team at the moment. It's just because it's against all the teams that everybody hates. They suck against the Orioles. They've been terrible against the Red Sox. Like, within the division, it's been terrible, and I think that's adding to a ton of the frustration that they can't beat any of the teams that everybody wants to beat.
Yeah, certainly, and it's teams that you're competing with. I mean, if the Blue Jays were a smidge better against the Orioles, they'd have a much better shot at the division right now. If they were anything against the Red Sox, because they've lost all seven games they've played against them, who knows if Boston's even in this race? Who knows if Boston isn't selling right now? I mean, it's you know, a huge deal in the context of the season, as much of a big deal as it was when the Blue Jays absolutely destroyed the Red Sox last season with their 16-3 record against them. It was something like the Blue Jays and Red Sox essentially had the same record last year, except when they played against each other, where, you know, the Blue Jays won 16 of 19 games. And this season, the Blue Jays are significantly better than the Red Sox, except when they play against each other, because the Red Sox are a below 500 team against the non-Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays are 17 games above 500 against the non-Red Sox. Like, even just including the Orioles, you know, they're 60-43 when they don't play the Boston Red Sox, and that hurts you. Like, that, it would be a lot more comfortable for most Blue Jay fans right now if the Red Sox were four or five games back, at least, instead of being two back.
It's one of the weirdest seasons I can remember, Ben. It's just such a weird year. Like, the strength of this team was always over this little era of Blue Jays baseball, I don't know however you want to call it, but the offense has always been such a strength for them, and they finally really locked down their pitching staff, and now they can't get a knock. That's another reason why it's so frustrating, is because the part of the team that everyone's so used to being, not dominant, but they've been one of the best. Haven't they been the best offense in the league a couple times here in this last few? And have it be like this, it's just stark. It's hard to watch.
Yeah, I will say, I do think it's a different style, too, that takes time to adjust to and is sometimes less exciting. Like you did mention, like their pitching has been phenomenal this year. There's really no other way around it. They've lost a starter. They've been a top five team in baseball. It's fluctuated a little bit, like their numbers went a little bit down in this series, but top five team in baseball throughout in ERA and runs against per game. They've essentially not dropped out of there. And I do think at times that kind of team, as much as it isn't as fun to watch sometimes, could be a team better built for the playoffs, because sometimes you can just pitch your way through rounds in the playoffs. But they, you know, even though they made moves that prioritized defense over offense, they were not expecting to be like this. They are getting down years out of several of the guys that play every day for them, and it's really hurt them, even if one or two of those guys were having better seasons. I think it's a whole different offense that we're looking at.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we can pinpoint them all, right? Chapman, Kirk, Vladdy, Bichette, no longer here, so he doesn't count for the immediate time being, anyways. And yeah, and obviously George Springer has been going through it in a big, big way. You know, looking at this team in terms of the lineup construction going forward, would you ideally kind of reshake things without Bichette? Because honestly, without him in there, it's almost like nobody makes sense. Now, so much of that is Springer's problems right now. He doesn't feel like any semblance of a leadoff man. I know you can put Witt up there, but have you kind of thought about how this team should rejig its lineup in the interim without Bichette in it?
I don't know if I have many solutions. I mean, slide Danny Jansen up when, you know, he's in the lineup, because he seems to come up with some big hits for them. But kind of like you said, like, I think my top three is still going to be Merrifield, Belt, Guerrero right now. And then you could flip, you know, they had Springer hitting cleanup and Chapman hitting fifth yesterday. And at least, you know, I think Chapman's been up and down, but his overall numbers are actually better this year than last year. Not the power numbers, but at least the rate stats in terms of, you know, like on-base slug and OPS. So you could slide him ahead of Springer. I mean, Springer is having like just the worst year of his career for most of his stats so far. So you could see him, you know, being slid down, I think, a little bit. But, you know, it's not, like you said, Kirk, you know, hits after Chapman. He's not having a great season. Varsho hasn't been hitting much all year. He's hitting next. So I really don't know if there's a ton you can do. I think you can bring Jansen up in the lineup a little bit more when you have him in there. But for the most part, I'm not sure that lineup changes at this point are going to be the answer. They just have to find a way to hit the baseball a little bit more.
Yeah. And when they were at the deadline, and, you know, after the deadline, I was saying that, you know what, maybe they just need to find a way to get their guys going. And that's going to be the biggest difference here. And I still do feel that way. But after watching yet another pretty, you know, let's be honest here, feeble effort with the bats at the against one of your biggest rivals, I think just injecting someone else, I know they got DeJong, but that was more of a Bo Bichette thing. Just injecting one other person just to have a different look. I know, I mean, maybe not even better, but just somebody different, shake things up. I know they called up David Schneider for this weekend or whatever, but like, is that the answer? It just feels like a team that needed to be shaken up a little bit, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not the most critical on the deadline, just because, like, the biggest bat that went was Tommy Pham, and, like, no offense to Tommy Pham, but that's, like, compared to some deadlines past, you know, like, I don't know if Tommy Pham or Jamer Candelario were here to save the Toronto Blue Jays. Like, I still think it's Vladdy and George and a lot of these other guys. I'm not saying it wouldn't have helped. Like, I think it certainly could have, and you look at the trade that you know, got Tommy Pham to Arizona. And I think that they're, you know, the Blue Jays probably could have offered something comparable there. They didn't give up a ton of prospect capital in their first three trades. And You know, I know Mark Canha was another guy that people liked. Mark Canha's offensive numbers are pretty much the same as Paul DeYoung's. He makes more money and would have cost more. So I'm not sure that I was huge on the Mark Canha trade that much as he's like a fun guy who posts funny Snapchats all the time, and I am into that. But I really do think that Davis Schneider here could be a big difference maker for them. You never know, because you don't know how much translating AAA to the majors is going to happen. But he has more home runs than anyone on the Blue Jays does this year, with 21 in only 87 games. He's just raking with a ton of power. He still gets, you know, his walks, and he's almost a one-to-one walk to strikeout guy. And frankly, more than a deadline move, I would have liked Davis Schneider to be up here earlier. I've been trying to get the Blue Jays to pull this guy up for, I mean, and not like seriously, but like been pleading on the radio for them to call him up for a while, because he's hitting in a way that no one else right now in the minors is hitting for them. Far better than Barger, and far different, and I think in a more functional way for the majors than someone like Horwitz, who's hitting really well but with not that much power, although he's on a bit of a run right now hitting homers. But I do think Davis Schneider could give them another look. At the same time, it's still, I still don't think at the deadline or internally there was anyone available that will hit even in the top five of their lineup. Because it wasn't like they didn't get Teoscar and he went to Philly. He didn't go anywhere. Cody Bellinger didn't go anywhere. None of those huge names like a Soto or a Salvador Perez went anywhere. So I still really think that, you know, the top of their lineup just has to figure it out, even if they were to make a trade for a guy like Tommy Pham or something like that. And they haven't done it so far, and they're especially not doing it with the best hitter in that lineup, Bo Bichette, on the injured list for what it sounds like could be a couple of weeks.
Yeah, the Teoscar thing's interesting, right? I was very much of the belief that there was a Toronto tax to be paid, but I do fluctuate my wonder on that, seeing as how he wasn't moved at all. I don't know how much they were looking to do that potentially. Last one for you before we let you go, just Kevin Gausman. It's been over a month since he's had his last absolutely nails, lights out start. He hasn't been brutal in the interim, but it's been a while. This is the guy who has to be the ace of this team. That's no knock on Jose Berríos, who's been really good this year, but there's a huge difference between having the best version of Gausman at the top of the rotation and Berríos. Any concern level for him, or do you think that this is a guy just kind of potentially shaking off some rust, shaking off an injury? Where are you at on Gausman?
Yeah, I'm not freaking out too much. I mean, it's obviously not the best. The Blue Jays would prefer, you know, to have Gausman, you know, go past five innings of work, which he didn't do yesterday. He didn't do that. He did do that in the previous two starts. I think a lot of it was just, you know, he pitched pretty much more than he's ever pitched in a first half for the Blue Jays this season. The four-man rotation, I think, was a really big deal in terms of stress on these guys, and he pitched really well through that four-man rotation stretch, obviously. He also, you know, he had some blow-up starts earlier in the year. He hadn't really had one in a while, and I will say that I think it's better for the Blue Jays to have some of these, like, he goes six innings, four earned, or four and a third, three earned, rather than, you know, the earlier in the season where he gave up like eight twice in a couple starts. Now, it doesn't mean it's good that he's had these down starts, but I think overall he's still probably resettling a little bit in. He was, you know, at least dealing with a minor injury recently, and the Baltimore Orioles are a phenomenal offensive baseball team in general. And so, and then the other tough start was his first one back after a couple weeks against Seattle. And I think to a certain extent that one could be written off a little bit as a fluke. So I'm not very concerned. If it kept going for two or three more starts, I think the concern level goes up. But for now, I think my faith in Kevin Gausman is pretty unwavering.
If my math is correct, he'll be back out against the Guardians, but obviously not this weekend against the Red Sox. Ben, enjoy the series this weekend. I know the Jays have a big impact on that, so I'm really wishing them luck. But hopefully enjoy your weekend, man. Thanks.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
There he goes, Ben Schulman. I do like the idea. He kind of walked it back of like, I've been pushing tires for Davis Schneider to come up. I like him. I like to envision that as him just loudly walking around Rogers Center being like, boy, that Davis Schneider sure is good. In earshot of like Ross and Mark or whoever else is poking around up there. That's how I like to envision it.
Davis Schneider getting called up.
Sure.
Shout out Johnny Sources from the Gate 14 podcast.
That's hilarious.
He called.
I saw that.
Yeah, so he's been fired up about that, and he does great videos.
I'm not aware of what is Gate 14.
He's big on the talk.
On the talk, yeah. I can't remember if we did this on air yesterday or not. I was playing golf with a guy, and he's like, "Oh, do you post stuff on. I'm like, no, nothing I do is on TikTok. Yeah. And you informed me I'm on there.
Oh, you're on the talk.
I'm on there.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They so got your face, pal.
The youth know me?
Yeah. They're always like, this guy is so hot.
No, actually, the last thing I need in the world is another public forum to second guess myself in. So I'm good on that. I'm just going to completely, again, like all adults in this world, I get my TikToks the way God intended. A week and a half later on Instagram, okay?
J.D. Bunkus is the criminal offender of this. He'll be like, check this out. He sends me so much stuff on Instagram. Like,
I don't send you...
And I'm like, bro, I'm like, boomer alert. Like, I saw this.
I don't send you anything. I do occasionally screenshot. I did send you a screenshot of a funny guy blowing out his Crocs yesterday because they weren't in sport mode.
Was there any Czech guys that won the gold medal in Nagano that played for the Oilers?
That's all you were thinking about.
I'm thinking about that. I mean, I was thinking about the interview, but whatever.
Czech guys.
Think about that. That's one for the break. Think about, like Spacek.
Yeah, no. Like, immediately, and I don't even think he's Czech. Medalish Hemsky. I don't know why.
Yeah, I know what would have really been a good one for would have been Hayduk.
That would have been good.
On Czech Republic.
That would have been very good. Speaking of TikTok, that guy is good.
So...
And again, I get all
this.
I don't know.
Actually, don't get on TikTok.
No, exactly.
Because you will become incredibly addicted.
If you look at my screen time, mm-hmm. like I don't know if you get this on your. Like,
oh, I get the screen time. You mean the?
The
most shameful minute of my week alert. You mean that one? Yeah,
see,
yeah, I get
nice
that every week.
I have my laptop too, and it'll do it on there. And I love that one because when I'm not working, I'm never on my laptop. So it's like you did no screen time this week, and I'm like, oh, look at me, so good. Don't talk to me, phone.
Well, when I'm, you know, it's nice, like, when you're on vacation. Next week, I'm going to really try to keep the screen time down.
That's the problem. Like, when I'm the only thing that used to get my phone, like, completely out of my hand and would just not think about it was golf. Mm. But now I'm a total, what generation of the youth?
I think Z? Gen Z?
I'm a Gen Z golfer. Mm. Like, there's a scorecard.
That's not true. If you're a Gen Z golfer, you'd be like, come play number 8 at Humber Valley with me. I tried that.
You did.
It's hard. It's really hard. You know, because you know when I go to play golf, you know what I like to do?
Play golf. And play it fast.
Fast. And it's like, it's hard on my reputation to be like setting up a camera. I'm like, oh, who am I?
It is a...
I would hire, you know, if there's a young intern listening that would like to come play golf with me and film me and edit it and upload it for free, by all means, come on out. There you go.
You're just putting out casting calls on the air now. Yes. Okay, good job.
If you are in sports media school, I don't know, is that a thing?
Yes, it's a thing.
Well,
it's a whole college.
Come film me. Okay, there you go.
All right. You know, I will say I've seen, like, this is advertised, and again, it's like very targeted, but I've seen they make golf bags now. Like, you know, they have pockets for everything. Mm. And I saw one with a dedicated pocket that the whole point of it is like you can put it on you put your phone in the pocket and it holds it perfectly with the camera just popping out.
Okay.
So you could, in theory, just like, okay, pop your bag right behind the tee, give it a whack. Hmm. Like, it doesn't make it as arduous as it could be.
So,
but like every other golf bag I've seen advertised on Instagram, it's like $5,000 for some reason.
And it will probably break. And
somebody
just tweeted me and said, have you seen the Golf Duco version of Puck Duco?
Oh, what would that even?
I don't know.
I bet it's like
winners and where they're from, like what they've won.
No, I like majors and then like the Travelers or what.
Golf Duco. I don't see anything. Send me the link, please.
All right.
Tweet me the link, Justin Carvey.
Okay. This is Blair and Barkery. What we're going to do, just a little quick bit of news from around baseball.
Oh.
Did you see what happened with Shohei Ohtani last night?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hit
two hits.
Tungsten arm.
Moduil all over again. Yeah. 4 scoreless innings, had a bomb, had a stolen base, had a knock, and left the game with cramps.
That's the Shohei hat trick.
Well, I was going to say,
he's
like,
Mr. Crampy.
This is not nothing.
Old crampsy, tungsten crampsy.
I want to be clear. I am not backing down from what I said about the Angels. I did all the twists and turns to arrive at my final opinion, which was I'm happy they didn't trade him. I'm happy they kept him.
Mm.
But if the whole point was, not the whole point, the whole point is to try to sign him in the offseason. Mm. But at least part of this was pushing in for this year to try to have a playoff push. And if old Cramps McGee, forget old Tungsten Arm, you need to be Tungsten Ab.
Cramps McGee.
Yeah.
All right. It's time for something, Gunner.
Okay. Go for it.
It's time for something just to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, 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 yum.
Do you think they like that, Reed? That's intense.
I actually, every time, expect the door to fly open and a wonderful rep from Great Canadian Meats to tell you
shower
to stop acting like a jagaloon.
Yeah. Jerky?
Yeah, no. Oh. No, they're ashamed of you. They're like, stop doing that. Okay. Just say the name.
Okay, I love it.
Okay.
So, something to chew on, Gunner.
Yep.
Pittsburgh Penguins, president of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
He got a demotion.
Has named a general manager for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
It is the same man.
It is.
So he is now the president and general manager? Was that correct?
That is correct.
Of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Correctamundo.
I'm sure that won't be stressful on his family at all.
I bet it's a lot less stressful than being one of those things in Toronto. I'm pretty sure of that.
I think, yeah.
You don't think?
I
understand the point of like, I want to be clear. I'm not blind to the idea of, you wanted more time with your family and you took on a second job. I understand that. But like, let's also not pretend that being
very clear, he used the Leafs as leverage. Now that the further we get away from it, it's very clear that he used the Toronto Maple Leafs as leverage.
It's also very clear the Leafs had their first choice.
That.
Yeah.
Admit it.
That your
beloved.
My beloved.
Your dearly beloved Kyle Dubas. Used the most storied franchise in the NHL as leverage to get more money from Pittsburgh. Admit it, because that's what happened.
Okay, like that. It is very clear to me that he tried to negotiate a contract and get more money and power for himself,
which is the semantics here, which is leverage.
Okay, it's a negotiation. You expect him to just say, the Leafs want me to be the GM. No way I should push for more power, more autonomy, or more money in this situation.
Contract. Well, and then he came back on a Wednesday and said, actually, my family, and I did a really weird press conference.
The press conference is weird. I'm never going to sit here and tell you that wasn't one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in my life. The other thing, though, I think that we all have to, and it's like, you take this for whatever you want to believe, we still are getting, it's like, they had a contract agreed on, says Shanahan. Like, that is what he said.
Mm.
Agreed can mean very different things to many different people. Is it a handshake agreement? Did you look each other in the eye? Did he sign anything? Like, that's the difference. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that there was not some negotiating ploy at play here, but I also think people are like, oh boy, look at this. It's like, let's not pretend that it is not way easier to have all those jobs and be the coach in Pittsburgh compared to one of those things in Toronto.
Did he give himself more money? Because that's apparently what he cares about, is money.
Well, I think autonomy was a big part of it as well. I think going back
to
all the conversations
we
had.
Now he just does everything.
Yeah, he runs the show.
Lots of time with the family.
Okay, like I don't understand
who
why.
He threw to the wolves of the Toronto media.
I just want to make sure I understand this. So you're happy.
I just never get to see my family.
So you're happy he's no longer the GM, but you're offended that he's no longer the GM. Am I getting that right?
I just think he's such a phony.
Okay.
I just think he's such a phony and always was. And then he just goes and he's like, my family's so stressed. I'm so stressed. I have no time with my family. He goes to another market and takes
where
on more.
Nobody cares.
Where
takes no
on
one cares.
More work.
Because
I want
no one
more
cares.
Work.
And it does
it's
not matter.
Definitely not, it doesn't matter there. It doesn't matter there. They don't care about Pittsburgh.
You're going to sit here and tell me it matters 1/8 or 1/10 of what it does here?
For sure.
I disagree.
There's not many markets I would say that for, but Pittsburgh, it matters there. It's a hockey town. They care. They love the Steelers, but the Pittsburgh Penguins would be second there for sure.
And if the Pirates won playoff series, they would jump.
I think hockey is bigger in Pittsburgh than you think. I think hockey is clearly number two.
Yeah, but it's really number four because the Steelers are like 1, 2, and 3.
We should get somebody on from Pittsburgh to ask them.
I think we should.
It's tough luck. That's all.
It's
a tough look for the Dubas. When Justin Bourne is tweeting negative Dubas things, I'm like, oh boy, this is tough for the Dubas.
Honestly, it's like I will never understand I will never understand it. You the whole time he was here, you wanted a different GM. You wanted him out. And then he left. The and way now it happened was terrible.
The way it was happened was dirty.
So okay. So again, just to be
he
clear,
he used the team I've loved my entire life.
Right.
That it matters the most. Yeah, that we always talk about.
He negotiated a contract.
No, he used him as leverage.
Okay. Again, like
leverage.
So do you think if they would have met his demands, he would be the GM of the Leafs or the GM of the Penguins?
Why did they deserve to meet his demands?
Well, okay.
What does he want?
Then the team walked away while negotiating a contract, and I don't know why you're upset about this.
Well, like, they're like, hey, he's like, I want more power, more money, more everything, and I've won nothing. Okay.
Well,
done.
Okay. And
yeah, it sounds like a great idea.
No, honestly. And then we should definitely look at the guy above him who still has all the autonomy and all the power.
That's
all
a different conversation.
Okay. Well, I think they're super connected if you're going to go there, to be perfectly honest.
Wow. I mean, it's just, he stinks too.
It's kind of all I needed to hear.
Listen, I'm not sitting here defending that. I will never defend that.
It's just that is the part of it that I can't understand is the people like yourself who were, let's be honest, like thrilled he's no longer the GM.
Correct.
But are upset that he's no longer the GM.
I'm not upset he's no longer the GM. It's just the way it happened was really dirty, and it just rubbed me the wrong way. It's always rubbed me the wrong way, and it will always rub me the wrong way.
Why is it dirty that he tried to negotiate for more things in the contract?
You're clearly going to just
keep saying this. No, well,
because he didn't deserve it, and he shouldn't have done it. That's why.
Okay, but if he didn't deserve it, then there should have been a bloodletting, and the guy in charge shouldn't be making the new decisions.
You know what? Maybe give the guy who took the biggest chance on you ever and fired a Hall of Famer to put you in charge in the most important stretch of Leafs hockey in my life.
Oh, so you wanted him to show loyalty to the guy who hired him?
Yes, show loyalty.
But when Jason Spezza did that, it was terrible.
Well, no, show loyalty. Oh, yeah, it's different.
Okay.
That's completely different.
You laid out that scenario, listen, not all that different.
He had nothing. He was a general manager of a junior hockey team, and Brendan Shanahan put him in charge of the Toronto Maple Leafs over Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah.
Unbelievably massive decision. There should be some sort of loyalty there. There should be a loyalty there. There should be something there. And to use them as leverage is dirty. It was dirty from the start.
I disagree. He negotiated.
And he negotiated through the media, using his family as a pawn. It was awful. It was a terrible move by him.
I think two things can be true. I think there is definitely a ploy of it to say that I'm going to put the family angle out there and that's going to get me more sympathy. But I also don't think it is untrue that the family angle was playing a part in it.
You're a big boy. It's the professional league.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and now he's never going to see them because he's even busier.
Disagree because he's doing it in Pittsburgh and he could like
he's a general manager and president.
Guess
what's he doing?
He could have some. I guarantee you the professional balance, work life, however you want to word that, workload, whatever, will be better for him in Pittsburgh with him calling the shots than it would be with him working under someone.
Mm. Okay,
seems pretty straightforward to me.
Okay,
all right. Michael Grange going to join us next. FIBA camp underway.
Oh, is it?
Canada basketball.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I know. Heaven forbid you open a book before you do the morning show.
No,
a little prep.
I got to work. I got to sleep.
All right. Michael Grange is going to join us next. We'll see what else in the world you could tell Sam McKee about.
Let's talk golf with him. Did you
hear the Raps hired a coach? Did you miss that one too?
I saw they hired playing coach Garrett Temple.
Okay. All right. Garrett Temple. Hot Garrett Temple talk coming up with Grange. Maybe not. Hot TPC Toronto talk.
Yes,
probably so.
Now we're talking.
Coming up with Michael Grange. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee here. Halfway through the show. Congrats to you, bud. You made it. Halfway, anyways.
Good Dubas yelling.
Yeah. Well, did that spurn you on or did it tire you out? Like, I worry that it was like, you know, kind of like when you sprint a little too early and you don't have that much juice left in the tank. I worried it'll...
There's very few things I enjoy more than getting you fired up about Kyle Dubas.
Pecking order. Mm. And I know we got Grange. He can hear
Rory
this.
Rory
or Dubas. What do you enjoy yelling at me about more?
That's a real Sophie's choice, but I don't think
it is. I think there's no bad choice for you there. I think you're just like both is the answer.
I love both a lot.
You can't pick a favorite?
I think I would say Dubas.
Okay, I was going to say, I want you to think about it because I want an answer by the time the show is wrapped up. All right. I don't know how this next person feels about, either guy, Kyle Dubas or Rory McIlroy for that matter. Michael Grange joining us now. Would you like to offer an opinion on Kyle Dubas or Rory McIlroy before we get into the meat of the FIBA World Cup, Grange?
Yeah, sure. no, I'm a big Rory fan. Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing him out of the, like, ambassador for the world of golf role and just go out and win some tournaments. And, you know, I think that'll help him. But I think he's, as pro athletes go, I think he's, we're lucky to have him. Mm-hmm. And then Kyle Dubas, I hope he does well in Pittsburgh. You know, I think he had a plan. I think the flatlining of the revenues after COVID kind of messed them, and they were trying to backfill ever since. So,
well, you're now Gunner's favorite.
I was going to say, Grange, I hope you don't have anything planned for the next hour and a half because you're a way better match for me than McKee. That's how I feel about both those things. That's awesome. Love you playing along with us there, Grange. I knew as soon as you started that answer, I mouthed to McKee cap, and then you went there, and I'm like, yes, on my side. Love it, Grange.
Are you golfing today, Michael?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Where? Name names.
I actually have been invited to a fancy private club. So,
Do you care to name pressure. It?
I think
do
he does not. I think he's specifically not.
Well, you know, Lampton.
Oh,
okay.
Ooh.
All right.
Very nice. Golf.
Very nice.
And
very
gym.
Nice.
So,
enjoy.
Yeah.
Well done. Yeah.
How's the game? How's the game?
That's what we need to know.
Are you in good shape for heading into this?
Not bad, not bad. Tied the franchise record the other day.
Ooh,
so
which is
77.
Oh, there we go. Nice.
And then more importantly, followed up with an 80. So that's hard to do.
I shot a 78 the other day, and then followed it up with a 93. Grange. So
yeah, that's
terrifying.
What I was very scared about.
Yeah, so, it's not good.
No.
All right, there you go. We've got the golf chat.
No, we need one more. I need a little scouting report on your Grange. The Grange of it's not 3-point Grange, but it's Grange's game. Well, what's getting you around out there? You got
what's
a good short game. You find him fairways. What's your game like, Grange?
I play up at Osprey Valley a lot, mm-hmm. and so their fairways are fairly generous. Mm-hmm. So I generally find them, but I can't take too much credit for that because, you know, it's hard not to. If you're not finding it there, you've got a problem.
Hands up. I got a problem.
And then when I'm playing badly, which is not that, which is somewhat regularly, my irons are terrible. My chipping and short game stuff is usually pretty steady, but that's usually the swing thing is if I can start kind of getting the back of my hand to the back of the golf ball.
Yeah.
And usually it's a little better.
Nice. Yeah. I watched one Phil Mickelson chipping TikTok recently, and it's completely changed my game. My chipping's been
fire. To the point that he had a session with a Canadian national team coach this summer and has foregone that advice because of one Mickelson tip.
Just hit everything off the front foot, and it's perfect every time. Anyways, we can get the hoops here if you want.
All right.
I'm fine either way.
All right.
I mean, don't tempt us because we could do this. We could just have a nice round table on all our games and our ales, but I don't know how much everybody wants that. The two of us want it very badly, but we should probably mention the FIBA World Cup training camp here for this team. We're just looking at the odds. They are second favorites. I guess that shouldn't come as too much of a surprise, but it kind of feels like one, right? Because Canada has had good rosters before, but hasn't had the results they wanted. Are you surprised that they come into the tournament as kind of second betting favorites there?
No. I think if you're, you know, part of that is how they set lines, right? So they're trying to attract money. I mean, I'm no expert in that, but
sound like one.
You know, so if they're, you know, you look at some of the name recognition they can offer, or Canada can offer, just in terms of Shea and Jamal in particular. You know, I think you're gonna. That's one way that you can attract some money on that. But are they legitimately the second most likely team to win the tournament? After the U.S., I wouldn't quite go that far. I think, you know, you just look at their opening round opponent, which is France, and, you know, they have maybe not quite the star power that you know, Canada can roll out with Shea and Jamal in particular, but, you know, they have one of the best defensive players in the world and Rudy Gobert, who's playing in the FIBA where you never have to leave the paint. You have, you know, Nick Batum, Evan Fournier.
These sounds like teams that beat Canada. I got to be honest.
They're teams, you know, the point I'm trying to make slowly is, you know, a team like France, and there are others like them that they have maybe not overall the depth of star power or the peak But they just have so many players who've played so long together. And like France is just coming off a European, you know, they've just been knocking at the door at World Cups, European Championships and things like that. And that's where Canada is missing. And they just don't have that collective scar tissue as a group. And even this team, you know, this is now the second year of the so-called summer core. You know, this team really only played a couple of games together last year. And even in those games, even though you had most of the core in training camp and kind of being around, they didn't actually play. You know, guys were injured on contracts and stuff like this. Like Jamal Murray and Shea have never played before together. So that's sort of where you'd kind of throw up a little bit of a yellow flag, I guess. And then also, as a roster, top to bottom, they just don't have a ton of shooting, which is, you know, that can bite you, right? Like, you just need one game at the wrong moment where you just don't have enough guys that can make shots from deep, and you can be into a problem. So that's the, you know, I'm not trying to be negative at all. No. I'm just trying to say that those are some of the issues. The other side of that is, this team is loaded. this week in camp, you know, they've kind of made three players a day available to the media. And, you know, we're now talked to nine different guys, and all of them are either seasoned NBA starters, or in the case of Jamal and Shea, and, you know, all NBA level players. And, that's not even mentioning RJ Barrett, who can take over games, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who's on the verge, I think, of breaking out in the NBA, and Lou Dort, who's one of the best. Yesterday we talked to Lou Dort and Dylan Brooks, and, you know, I've been around a lot of professional athletes, clearly, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you kind of get numb, especially around the NBA, how big and athletically imposing some of these guys can be. Lou Dort and Dylan Brooks, I cannot imagine how people score on those guys. It is like Dylan Brooks is built like a really good CFL rush end. Like, he is 6'6", 6'7". He's got to weigh about 240. He is absolutely packed. And, you know, like, he clearly could be an NFL quality athlete. Like, I mean, he is that big and strong. And obviously playing basketball, he's got the quickness and all that. And Lou Dort for sure could play in the NFL, like for sure. Like, he is the definition of an NFL linebacker. He's like 6'5", 230. There is everything on him is like, he is chiseled. And just talking to those guys back to back, you're standing there and you're like, what the hell? And literally, as a guy who's played a reasonable share of basketball, I'm like, you could never score on them. You just couldn't.
So,
and in FIBA in particular, they're way more liberal on how you, the amount of physicality you're allowed to use off the ball. And for people who are familiar with basketball or not, like, that really matters. It's equivalent of clutching and grabbing in hockey. And, you know, and you can really impede how players set screens. Yet that screws up the angle of the screen. You can impede how the player trying to use the screen can get to the screen. And, you know, they have not just one of the best defenders in the world, they have two. And, and then you kind of go through the rest of their lineup, and, you know, they're just kind of loaded with RJ Barrett, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. They just have a collection of guys. Shea himself is 6'6" with arms of a 7-footer. You know, they just have a collection of guys who can be disruptive defensively, can switch defensively. And, I think that's the other side of that coin is this team can really have an identity that way.
Yeah, like every time I watch one of these FIBA games, Grange, against Canada, they've just got like a couple butchers who are just beating the crap out of everybody. And it's like, that's what you need. And Canada has multiple guys like that. So I do love that aspect. What about that? You're talking about the continuity and that potentially being an issue. You know, they brought in a brand new coach right before this. You know, Jordy Fernandez takes over for Nick Nurse. How big of a factor is that going into this? Because this is like his first time running a Canada camp, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's a big deal. It is his first time. And literally, it's 25 days.
Yeah.
from the first day of practice to, you know, playing against France. I keep mentioning France. That's the first team they play in group play. And, you know, and it's a huge game. and that's just not a lot of time. Sorry, I just choked on my coffee.
Hey, that's just not a lot of time. As good a thing to choke on as any.
Yeah. To get the level of cohesion you're going to need. But, you know, the flip side of that is the, you know, the staff is returning. So there's a lot of continuity there. And one thing I've heard over and over again, and I, you know, I've talked to some of the assistants I know who've worked with these players in the past and, you know, just knowing the players individually is it's a very, very high IQ group. And, you know, and you kind of underestimate sometimes how much information these guys are required to process in terms of, you know, the schemes they're running, the, you know, how to diagnose the defenses they're facing, and, you know, flip that around the other side of the ball, all the personnel stuff. And, you know, when you get to the level most of these guys have reached in the NBA, a huge part of it is your IQ and how able, quick you are, you can process, and you know, the level of familiarity you have with whatever concepts are being presented. And, you know, on this team, again, because of what I was talking about in terms of, you know, both the quality of the players they have and the level of experience they have throughout the roster, you know, that's a big plus. So, you know, it's not ideal for sure to have a new head coach, you know, a month before a tournament. But it's the situation, I think, is they're going to make the best of it just because of the team they are.
Yeah, that's it'll be interesting to watch for sure. And I know a lot of people are excited, rightfully so, myself included. Grange, most importantly, though, as Mike Babcock told us yesterday, hit him straight.
Hit him straight, Grange. Impress him at that private club.
Or at least where you can find him.
Yeah, at least, yeah, yeah, somewhere. Yeah.
Hopefully impress
that's
him.
That's all I hope for.
Yeah.
There he goes, Michael Grange, our pal. Just, he loves golf.
Just make sure your socks are low.
He loves golf and coffee, so yeah. Welcome anytime.
So while we were talking to Grange there, we just have the TVs on in here.
Yeah.
And I was looking up there. I just saw an absolute hoot nanny at the Jake Paul, Nate Diaz thing.
Yeah.
Was that a real thing?
I mean, I've never been more out on something so quickly. And you know me, once I'm out, it's hard to make me reverse course as the Paul brothers. Just
Can I admit something to you?
You could admit whatever you want. I'm telling you, you're wrong too, because I know what you're going to say.
I'm interested in these fights.
Yeah, no, I know.
This is what boxing's become. Like, this is like
it's
now.
It's terrible.
It is. It was
disgusting.
It was a sweet science. It was one of the most popular sports for a long time.
Like, we don't feel that far removed from, like, and I want to be clear. Like, I'm not Mr. Boxing here. Like, I'm not Max Kellerman, but I love
what's the Boston writer that does boxing? He's on Simmons sometimes.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Danielle, you'll know.
Oh, is it Shaughnessy? Is that who you're talking about?
No, there's like a guy that's like really popular Boston writer that does boxing. Mannix, thank you.
Chris Mannix.
Thank you, Danielle. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah.
And he does coverage for it for them as well.
Yes, that's right. But like, I'm not going to pretend I'm Mr. Sweet Science here, but I love the idea of big fight.
Boxing match, 10 times out of 10 over UFC.
1,000%.
Not even close.
Like, the one that sticks out to me, and it's like, I'm sure there have been other big fights since then, but it's like the Mayweather-Pacquiao. Like,
Mayweather-McGregor was huge,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but, like, he's not a boxer.
Yeah, you know? He stood in there. Did pretty well.
I do not. Once it's like, hey, this guy's
right.
Not a boxer.
Pacquiao.
Like, I'm out.
Pacquiao.
Now, I feel like some boxing nerd. I recall having some conversations with somebody here who liked it. And there's like, you know, there's been some big Canelo fights, but he hasn't had the foil like you had with Mayweather Pacquiao. Mm-hmm. That was the last one. I remember watching with a Filipino buddy and when Pacquiao got dropped.
Oh, yeah.
We were at you want to talk about a hoot nanny. That was at the Madison, like in the prime of my 20s on a fight night. A lot of affliction.
A lot of tap out, a lot of affliction. Yeah.
Just complete side note that you'll appreciate. This will shock you. I was not a big affliction t-shirt guy, but I remember when I moved to Windsor, we're like going out. My bud's like, yeah, wear this affliction shirt. And I'm like, it's not me. He's like, yeah, but this is the whole thing. New city. Nobody knows you. Just go be an affliction shirt guy for a night.
Did you wear it?
I wore it out.
Attaboy!
But I was like, I was like, this is not for me. This is not for me.
But yeah. I feel like if you wear that shirt,
it has to be for you. Well, that's the thing. I'm like, there will be a hootenanny.
I'm fighting.
Yeah. So every time I see it, honestly, it just makes me sad. Like I am so wishful. I was about to use a different word, but I'll dial it back a little bit. I'm so wishful.
You long?
I long for it. Yeah. I long for the days of a big, sexy boxing fight that isn't, hey, look at this guy who's not a boxer. And look at this. Like,
who's the heavyweight champion of the world right now?
Okay. Oh, I do know this. Is it Tyson Fury still? Is he still the champ?
I don't know if that's true.
Oh, Daniele says he's a scaredy cat, so he's holding on to the belt, and that's why he has it.
Okay.
How do you know everything?
He should be here, not me. I'm like, what are we talking to Grange about? This guy knows the heavyweight champion of the world. He's buzzing in my ear with everything I need to know. He knows so much.
There was a guy... Oh, he was the heavyweight champ right before Tyson Fury. He was like a bigger guy. And
I've heard of...
No. He was a Spanish guy, I think.
One person I've heard of on this list is Canelo Alvarez. I've heard of him. But I'm looking through this. It's like, that didn't used to be the case when we were kids.
No, you heard
boxing
of all the guys.
Was like big deal. So I guess it's kind of...
Andrew Ruiz is Daniele buzzing in my ear. And he was like a fun story because he wasn't really supposed to be the heavyweight champ. Apparently he was like a really good boxer and then he kind of lost his way. And then somebody had to pull out. So he got the fight. He was like a little overweight and he just beat the wheels off the guy. So I do remember that being a fun story. It was definitely just because Simmons was talking about it. But yeah.
There's definitely like... I do like a big... UFC fight too. Like they're the night before the Super Bowl, what's the guy's last name? Is Volkanovski.
Sure.
He fought the Russian guy.
Daniele, I see the top of his Jay's hat nodding.
Looks like the guy. He fought the guy that's like looks like Khabib.
Okay.
The Russian guy who's like
I was about to say he fought Hasbulah. What?
What's his name? Okay, I'm not gonna say that. Okay. Makhachev. and all the boys bet heavy on the dog on Volkanov or Volkanovski. Yeah, yeah. And he's just like this little muscle meatball from Australia. Yeah. And he was a live dog. And many, many UFC people were on my Twitter said he should have won.
Wow.
And there was like a moment in the fight when he got on top of Mechkov or whatever. And he was like punching down on him. And there was eight guys at 2 a.m. screaming about it, all betting on it. It was one of the most electrifying moments of my life. Gambling on fighting is very fun.
A good drunk yell about anything is great, but combat sports
specifically. And we were like slapping knees and like, go, go. Yeah,
it's great.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is the thing. It's like, you don't have to be in the throes of the IBF rankings to enjoy watching somebody get punched in the face. Like, it is a pretty visceral, awesome thing. Yeah.
Buy the pay-per-views.
You got to be a true boxing sicko to buy the pay-per-view by yourself to sit there. But it's like, go out to a bar, get a bunch of buds together, whatever it is. I love it. I'm putting the PSA out there to boxing. If you would like to have a guy that is a superstar that would intrigue me, I would sign up for that.
I would too.
Would subscribe.
So, but you know, this has no interest for you, Nate Diaz versus...
None.
Was it Jake or... Logan, which one's fighting?
Doesn't matter.
Jake Paul's fighting.
Okay. Doesn't matter.
I have
no interest. I have none. I hope Nate Diaz beats the wheels off him. But I looked at the odds and he's like a big, big underdog apparently.
Who is Nate Diaz? Well, I will say this. Like, I know they're all fake.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I'm impressed by the athleticism of Jake Paul.
Buddy.
He looks like a stud. He's an athlete. He boxes. His brother was wrestling. Like, these guys are at least athletes. Like, they look like an athlete to me.
I guess the problem I have with this is, like, what would be the equivalent of... Because, you know, everybody always makes fun of, like, Drake for, like, wanting to jump on the bandwagon or whatever. And it's like,
Drake. He's such a cornball.
Yeah, of course. You know what I would do? It's like, try to be friends with all the athletes. But what else I would do, though, if I was a 22-year-old or however old these Paul brothers are, millionaire with all the time in the world on my hands, you know what I would do? Dedicate my life to not sucking at golf. But you know what I wouldn't do?
Yeah.
Set up matches with, like, a croquet player because it's kind of similar and then be like, look at me. I'm a pro. I beat this croquet player at golf or whatever. Like, it just, that is the thing that that is the thing I can't wrap my head around.
Croquet?
I have,
it's a ton of fun, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually really good.
You put the foot on the ball, you give it a good smack. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's great.
Don't you, like,
kind of.
Yeah,
like,
but you also can do one where you step,
radio
you
me
step
doing
on the
motion without
you step
it?
On the ball yeah. in front, and then yeah. you give it a good crack.
I love it. It's
great.
A good game.
Hot game.
It is fun.
All right, croquet guest next week. Probably not, but we will talk to our next guest. Going to head to Boston. Find out who's getting the ball for the Sox other than Paxton in this series. 1 hour left, and get your text in for shout-outs. 590-590. Please include your name and location. Fan Morning Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.